glorified by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. According to one of the prominent early scholars, jurist of the Sunni scholar Al-Jassas, where he has a book on fiqh dealing with the ayat of Quran about jurisprudence, where he talks about these issues and he says this is actually a clear indication of infallibility of Ali and Fatima salawatullah alayhim. Then Ali comes and says, فَأَنْشِدُكُمْ بِاللَّهِ, I remind you of Allah. أَتَعْلَمُونَ عَنَّ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ قَالَ, do you know that the Prophet said, الْحَقُّ مَعَ عَلِيٍّ وَعَلِيٌّ مَعَ الْحَقِّ, the truth is with Ali and Ali is with the truth. Now this is, you can say that he has said about Ammar also, for example. Al-haqq ma'ammar wa ammar ma'al-haqq. Yes, he has said about it. But what he said about Ali after that, he has not said it about anyone. Even Imam Fakhruddin Razi, a Sunni Mufassir of Quran, talks about this when he talks about, you know, saying Bismillah in the Surah Fatiha. Should you say loud or not? He uses the example of Ali and he says, why not? Because the Prophet said, Al-Haqq ma'aliyin wa aliyin ma'al-haqq. And then he recites the other part, where here Ali says, Yazulu al-Haqq ma'aliyin haythu zal. That the Prophet said that the truth is with Ali and Ali is with the truth, and the truth will turn in whatever direction that Ali would turn. For everyone else, you have to see whether he is with the haqq or not. Number 17. فَأَنْشِدُكُمْ بِاللَّهِ هَلْ فِيكُمْ أَحَدٌ أَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ فِي آيَةُ تَطْحِيرُ, I remind you of Allah. Is there anyone among you besides myself about whom Allah revealed the words of purity? Where he says in Surah Ahzab, إِنَّمَا يُرِيدُ اللَّهُ لِيُظْهِبْ عَنْكُمْ وَرِجْسَ أَهْلِ الْبَيْتِ وَيُطَحِّرُكُمْ تَطْحِيرًا. Again, this is itself, you know, needs a whole lecture to talk about this ayat. When it was revealed, how do you explain it? It's a very long, ayat of Quran. This is only one statement towards the end of it. How does it relate to Ali and Fatima and the two sons and the Prophet? But this is the event of Hadith al-Qisa that we see.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mateen شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمن
Economic divide.
It was an electrifying presidential election in Turkey, which many thought would yield a new president. But President Erdogan defied all odds and was able to come out victorious. But no sooner was he elected that the market tanked, along with the lira. Hopes remain with the new economic team, but will it be enough to turn things around for the Turkish economy? Just some of the highlights coming up in this program. We will take a look at, for example, the Turkish economy as a whole, where the lira has devaluated. At the same time, inflation has hit 40% or higher. This is while GDP growth is at 4% so far for the year 2023. We'll break that open in terms of the GDP growth of the previous years and see why the Turkish economy is not doing as well as it should. Then economic turnaround, many have pinned their hopes on this because of the new finance minister and central bank governor. Interest rate hike, well, it has gone up to 15%. However, the lira has continued to fall, but some say it's too early to make a judgment on this. And then outside interference, maybe. Don't forget Trump's threat. Ruin Turkey's economy is what he said. The U.S. is fourth largest source of imports for Turkey and the fifth largest source of exports. Erdogan's disagreements with Biden could also be a factor.
Turkey is in the midst of a cost of living crisis stemming from soaring inflation, which peaked at 85.5% in October compared with a year ago, before easing to 43.7% in April. Turkey's newly re-elected President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has brought former finance minister and Merrill Lynch banker Mehmet Simsek back into his cabinet. Erdogan has also brought back U.S. banker Hafize Gaye Erkan as the new head of Turkey's central bank. Experts have said the new lineup are signs that the president Erdogan has finally given the green light for a policy turnaround.
It's time now to see what's posted online on this topic. First up, we're going to take a look at what's been tweeted. And it said before, and this is before the June, actually, 22nd meeting that took place in terms of the interest rate hike that occurred. They are clearly guiding the market here, but consensus seems to be more hawkish. Simsek proposed to Erdogan an 18-month time frame where he would gradually increase benchmark interest rates from 8.5% to as high as 25%. Obviously, many were very excited about this. Now, after the rate hike, this is what we picked. Turkey's central bank sharply raises interest rates. That could signal an economic turnaround, where it said the bank raised its key rate by 6.5 percentage points, boosting it to 15%. The increase, a significant jump from the current 8.5%, is the first since March of 2021. Now, let's see what the reaction was to this interest rate hike, which wasn't that great. Some analysts criticizing the central bank's move as not going far enough. However, you have Timothy Ash from the emerging markets, who's an emerging market strategist at Blue Bay Asset Management. He said, ouch, disappointing, not enough. They needed to front load hikes. Markets won't like that. And then we picked this website. That's how the market's reacting so far to this, where it said the Turkish lira sinks to weakest on record after the rate decision, slipping to 2.6% to 24.20 against the dollar as of 2:35 p.m. in Istanbul, the time when this was posted. Turkey's central bank hiking its main one-week repo rate by 650 basis points to 15% is below the median estimate, which was conducted in a Bloomberg survey, since they all expected an increase of at least 20%. And finally, this was obviously a very important development. Turkey raising minimum wage by 30% amid the rising cost of living crisis. This is the second hike so far this year, as high inflation takes its toll on low-income earners. So we try to pick some developments coming out of that interest rate hike that many were looking forward to in Turkey. All right, let me introduce our guest for our first segment of the Q&A. Joining us is Arda Tunca. He's an economist and columnist at Turkish news site Politico, who joins us. Arda Tunca, welcome to Economic Divide. Taking a look at the Turkish lira, it has crashed and it keeps devaluing since the year 2021 at a minimum. And you having that occur while inflation is reporting to be around 40 or 50%, even though some say it's really above 100% in some cases. And this is actually happening at the same time where the economy is growing by anywhere between 4 to 7%. Can you please tell us what is going on with the Turkish economy overall? Why are we looking at what we're looking at this point?
Well, at the end of 2021, there was a new plan put in place by the government. And according to that plan, it was actually called the new economic model, the new economic model. And according to that model, Turkey was going to produce current account surplus. And once the rate of interest was going to be reduced, then the rate of inflation is also going to go down. But just the opposite has just happened in Turkey.
All right. Let me introduce our next guest, see what he thinks about what's going on. Yunus Soner. He's a political scientist, and he's the former deputy chairman of the Vatan Party who joins us. Yunus Soner, welcome to the program. You know, I'm going to ask this question because this is something that the former U.S. President Donald Trump said back in 2019 about how he threatened to obliterate Turkey's economy if it takes off-limits actions. Now, putting aside what those actions may be or were, it doesn't matter. But my basic question is about outside influence or factors that may have an impact on Turkey, in particular coming, in this case in point, from the U.S. I mean, are we looking at the U.S. in any shape or form having an influence or any kind of foul play going on when it comes to Turkish economy?
Yes and no. The current situation we have here with the accelerated devaluation of the national currency there is no proof for U.S. intervention into that. And as I mentioned in the first question, Turkey's dependency on foreign economy, mainly the European, but also the Western economy, the U.S. economy, U.S. funds, Turkey's becoming part of the dollar world, the dollar empire, is basically a homemade dependency, which has been historically influenced by several U.S. political interventions as well, from coup d'etats to electoral meddling, to influence in public thinking, and so on. But it is, the situation we have right now is mainly a homemade situation, which is a dependency on foreign capital. And here, of course, you have indirect U.S. intervention in the form of rising U.S. federal rate, interest rates, which are not directed specifically against the Turkish economy, but which do make investment in the United States more profitable for those speculative capital funds that have been circulating around the world and which Turkey now wants to attract itself.
It's time now for the InfoNews section of the program, where we pick four items and review it for you, different pieces of items from our main topic, in order for you to get an idea about what's going on around the world. First up, it was deemed as an important visit, the Prime Minister of India visiting the United States. Red carpet was rolled out for him by the U.S. But the question that came about, and we picked this particular entry for it, was why is Washington rolling out the red carpet for the Indian Prime Minister? This entry said the potential to not only infuse new energy into the India-U.S. relations, but also to have an impact on the global order. Now, the key phrase there, global order. The Indo-Pacific, now this is where ED comes in terms of the analysis that we have picked. We look at it this way. The Indo-Pacific is where the U.S. possibly needs India's influence more than anywhere else right now. Why? Because the U.S. has long viewed India as a counterbalance to China's growing influence in the region. Okay. Next up, the UK and interest rates, how it's affecting that country. Well, the Bank of England has increased the base rate to 5%. It's up from 4.5%. I know this might sound like a repeat, but this was very major because it was a bigger increase than most forecasters actually expected. Our analysis into this interest rate rise will heap more pain on working families. Not good news for them, especially the ones who are making mortgage repayments. Yet inflation has still remained high in that country. It has held steady at 8.7%. And the big question is, will this tame inflation? Next up, on to the U.S. and a problem that has persisted in that country and has increased homelessness. That is something that is plaguing the U.S. 2 years after the pandemic aid ended is when there has been an increase in cities and states across that country. Homelessness rates have been climbing nationally by about 6% every year since the year 2017, reaching so far about a little over 421,000 people. Our analysis into this rising homelessness comes amid soaring housing costs and rising prices for essentials like food and transportation. At the same time, keep in mind that more than 35 million people in the U.S. still need government-funded food assistance. So that kind of put things into perspective. Then mention of the summit is what we found interesting in this entry, where it appears that there's another climate summit coming up, this Paris summit, which interestingly, there was one held before in the city of the capital of France. It aims to mobilize trillions of dollars for the climate transition. Now, world leaders are supposedly going to shake up the world's major development banks, like the World Bank and the IMF, to get more money flowing to developing nations that are prone to climate disasters. That's been something that's been the focus. Now, our analysis into this is loans to many developing countries are typically viewed by the World Bank and IMF as riskier investments and are therefore subjected to higher interest rates and less favorable terms. This is why many of the poorest countries, particularly those in Africa, are stuck in a spiral of debt already.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of the program. For this section, we figured it's best to give you an idea of President Erdogan's policies, economic policies, going into the elections in order to see how he fared and what really transpired maybe back to a year ago and how things move forward going into his preparation for the elections, which obviously he was reelected for. So this is what it looked like in terms of his policies, which were largely criticized, by the way. Things like low interest rates, credit growth, wage increases, tax forgiveness, and also free gas. Now, maybe these may have handed him another term during last month's elections. Despite the runaway inflation, they have been very problematic for the economy as a whole. But these five things that you see over here, as I mentioned, for example, the free gas, yes, there were things that did help him to get reelected. Now, moving on to the next factor revolving around Erdogan's economic policies. Since 2021, he has propped up his economic program through what's called currency swaps or deposit deals with regional neighbors such as Qatar, the UAE, Russia, and Azerbaijan. And there's a definition of the currency swap, in case you don't know, an agreement in which two parties exchange the principal amount of the loan and the interest in one currency for the principal and interest in another currency. And those were the four countries below, as I mentioned, who were involved in that. All right, next, even after this is a big deal. I mean, there was a recent $5 billion deposit that was made to Turkey. It's an unknown foreign country. I'm sure it's known to President Erdogan and his inner circle, but it's been registered as an unknown foreign country. After that was made to the central bank, to its reserves, which include domestic borrowing from local banks, now we're looking at $5 billion in the negative for the current reserve amounts. So that's pretty problematic for Turkey. Experts are fearful of a balance of payment crisis if Ankara continues to follow the same route. Now, moving on to two of Turkey's really Achilles heel, namely the lira and inflation. Now, in terms of the lira, in the past 5 years, as you can see over here, 80% of its value has been lost. When you take a look at from the year 2021, it was 44% that it was down, and then the year 2022, 30%. And for the current year, the lira was last trading at 24.97 against the greenback. Okay. Now, when it comes to inflation, let's take a look at what's happening there. All right, the inflation in this case in point, taking a look here, for the year 2023, we're looking at roughly about 40%. It's still not good. And that's what's actual on paper, so it could be a lot more. Now, keep in mind that back in the year 2022, look at the inflation rate that Turkey was experiencing back then, 85.51%. And again, that's registered on paper. Many are saying that that inflation would be a lot higher. So things are not looking good in that regards for everyday people there in Turkey. Now, moving on to the next item, in terms of interest rate hikes, there was a lot of anticipation that the rates would be raised from the current 8.5% that you're going to see to 20% or more in a bid to cool the runaway inflation. Now, as you can see here, it's 8.1%, which was back in 2018, where it was lowered. The Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan lowered it to that, but with the new team, they increased it to 15%. Okay, but that disappointed many people. Although it was almost doubled, it failed to have the desired impact, like on the lira, which tanked even further, losing 27% against the dollar. And that's unfortunate. It may be still too soon. Now, moving on to the next item, which is kind of a mystery. When you take a look at the GDP growth rate of Turkey, take a look at that. For the year 2021, 11.4%. Keep in mind the current currency crisis actually started back in the year 2021. Then 2022, the growth rate was 5.2%. And for 2023, so far, we're looking at 2.7%. So Turkey is experiencing GDP growth, but it's still not able to have the desired outcome when it comes to things like the inflation or the value of the lira. So obviously these are things that are very worrying. All right, let's bring back our guests and see what they think. Rejoining us for this segment, we have Arda Tunca, economist and columnist at the Turkish news site Politik Yol, who rejoins us. Arda Tunca, welcome back. You know, you have these elections that have happened in Turkey. At the same time, obviously Erdogan have been reelected, a new central bank governor is in place, and there's many hopes pinned on that. Do you think there's going to be a turnaround in the Turkish economy with this new team? We're seeing that they have increased the interest rates, but still, what are the chances of Turkey's economic turnaround in this case in point?
Yes, absolutely. It is a problem. And as I told you, this might be only window dressing until the local elections in March 2024. So if you tell people, you tell the populace in Turkey, your electorate every day that you're going to reduce the rate of interest, and as long as I'm in power in this country, don't expect me to increase interest rates. That's what Erdogan said constantly, insistently, almost every day, every week, and in his every speech in this country. Now, you have a different team, but there are some struggles as far as I see. The former central bank governor is now the head of the banking system, the regulatory body of the banking system. And the new finance minister is assigned, and the new governor, we have a new governor at the central bank. Now I think there are going to be some political tug of war, some power struggles are going to happen. So this is totally unknown. I mean, Turkey absolutely needs for a certain period of time, Turkey needs to entice foreign investors because Turkey's resources, as I said, have been depleted. But in order to gain confidence, you have to change your approach to the economy. But is it going to be sustainable? This is the question mark.
Indeed, that's a question that we'd like to find out. Let me bring back Yunus Soner, see what he thinks, political scientist and the former deputy chairman of the Vatan Party. Yunus Soner, welcome back to Economic Divide. We're looking at the fact that you have not only Erdogan being re-elected, but also the fact that he's put pretty much a new economic team, i.e. the central governor and the finance minister. But what are we looking at when it comes to, for example, the way that they're going to move forward? We know the interest rate hike has been done. It has disappointed many. The lira still tanked, but maybe that needs more time. How do you see the economic downturn of Turkey or the economic turnaround of Turkey, given the new team and moving forward at this point in time?
Well, first of all, as far as I'm informed, President Erdogan and Mr. Mehmet Şimşek, the new finance minister, do belong to the same government. So this division of the government that Mr. Erdogan says he still insists on his policy approach while accepting Şimşek's decisions seems to be much more oriented towards the public opinion. The general expectation here is that at tomorrow's meeting in the central bank, there will be an increase of interest rates. The finance minister, Mehmet Şimşek, in his public declarations also stated that he wants Turkey to return to, quote, the rational model in economy, end of quote, which consists in high interest rates, in budget balancing, in austerity measures, in fighting primarily inflation instead of supporting growth as it has been done in the last 3 years with the cheap money and cheap credit which the Erdogan government had provided to the public economies.
Turkey is poor in raw materials and traditionally imports many more goods than it exports, and therefore suffers from a high current account deficit. Turkey's current external financing needs are estimated at more than $200 billion. At the same time, the national debt is growing, and due to the dramatic currency decline, the cost of importing raw materials and goods continues to rise.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Mati Apusyan. The Turkish economy may be in a crisis mode of sorts, but all of it is not a result of President Erdogan and his economic policies. It may be due to outside factors out of the control of the Turkish government. One of them has to do with the U.S. The U.S. Federal Reserve rise in interest rates in a bid to rein in inflation has also affected the Turkish economy. For emerging economies, particularly for Turkey, rate hikes to rein in the inflation are bad news, while most emerging economies took steps to cushion the economic impact of the Fed's rate hikes, including interest rate hikes of their own to safeguard the value of their currencies and to prevent the flight of foreign funds. Turkey did not do that and instead decreased its interest rates. Another one of Turkey's problems is the collapse of the country's savings rate. From 25% of GDP a year ago, the figure today is less than 15%. This has left the country heavily dependent on foreign funds for investments in the country. In many ways, that dependence is the main problem of the Turkish economy. What about the trade balance? The value of goods exported minus the value of goods imported. A positive value indicates a trade surplus and a negative value a trade deficit. A budget deficit leads to higher levels of borrowing, higher interest payments, and low reinvestment, which will result in lower revenue during the following year. The opposite of a budget deficit is a budget surplus. Here is a snapshot of Turkey's balance of trade, and it is clear that there is a deficit problem. Back in 2013, a Financial Times special report on Turkey said that Turkish business executives and government officials believe the quickest route to achieving export growth lies outside of traditional Western markets. This came to light when Turkey announced its interest in joining BRICS. Turkey, along with Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Iran, has applied for membership to this growing trade bloc. Once this happens, it can certainly help with the deficit and in turn affect Turkey's foreign exchange reserves.
Turkey's economic problems are not exactly all attributed to the government's missteps. There have been outside factors that have contributed to Turkey's economic problems, which I indicated in the program earlier. Even though many are blaming Erdogan for the economic problems, many AKP voters still believe that only Erdogan can fix the economy. So, as the title of our program suggests, Turkey's economic crisis, a turnaround, that is what is called a wait-and-see game. So far, the 15% interest rate hike, that has not impressed the market. We have to wait and see what's going to happen. Thank you so much for tuning into our program. It was great having you with us. From Mikhail Takmay and the team here at Economic Divide, it's goodbye until the next program.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Very welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atal, the host of this program. Said Mohsen Naghvi and Sheikh Rouhani are two special guest speakers for today's discussion. Said Mohsen, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
So for today's discussion, we want to talk about the main message of the Qadir event. We know that on the Qadir event, in a place called Qadir Khum, Prophet Muhammad, by the order of Allah, selected Imam Ali alayhi salam as his successor. And it was Hajjatul Wada, isn't it? A kind of farewell hajj. It was the only Hajj of Prophet Muhammad after Islam. So Qadir Khum event took place, you know. So now Qadir Khum event is the milestone for the unity or the Wahda of the Ummah. But unfortunately nowadays, the people all across the world and the Muslims accuse Shias that Qadir Khum event is a kind of disagreeing line between you and us. Why this took place? I mean, the main message and the original message has been changed into something else, Said Mohsen.
Well, obviously, there are two reasons. One is the political reason.
Yes.
And when we talk about the political reason is that, especially, you know, there are people who do not want to accept the Ahlul Bayt, and they are the followers of Umayyad Caliphate, we say. And they don't want to follow the true Islam. The other reason is that because the interpretations were different, and unfortunately, since the rulership that we had after the Prophet, for example, the Umayyad Caliphate, after that we had the Abbasid Caliphate, they all were opposing Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam.
Yes.
Therefore, they never wanted this event of Ghadir to be expressed in its true way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we had different interpretations, and then it went into the people, and the scholars also made their own comments. in order to differentiate or change the meaning of even the words of the hadith, as our respected guest had said, like Mawla as the meaning of love.
Yes.
So basically, it was a political, we can say, concern that due to which the meaning was changed. But what we can see is, we can see that obviously this is the matter of unity in today's world. If, you know, a time which we want to think where all the Sahaba, they all were united at one place in front of Prophet.
Mm-hmm.
That was the place of Ghadir.
Yes.
Where Imam Ali was there. For example, Abu Bakr and Umar, they both have went to Imam Ali. They said, "Anta Mawlai, you're my master." You know, even if you take the meaning of friend, doesn't matter. Take a meaning of friend for some time. Yeah?
Now, what is the need to do bay'ah with a person, yes, and say, "You are my friend"?
So you say, "You're my friend," for example.
Yes.
Wa Mawlaya kulli mu'min wa mu'minatin.
Okay.
And the friend of all the mu'minin and mu'minat.
Mm.
So was he the enemy before that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question, basically.
Okay.
Was he enemy that the Prophet when made, you know, this? And if the Prophet was concerning the friendship at that time, they should say, "Now, those who oppose you," you know, the statement should be in this way, that those who oppose you, now they're your friend. And no one is, you know, we can say, like, enemy with you or have enmity with you. So this should be the statement, whereas the statement is different.
Even they say there was a tent established,
yes,
and the wives and the women of the tribes went there and did bay'ah with Imam Ali alayhi salam.
So they all have taken the oath.
Why the women must say that you are my friend?
Yes.
Okay.
So it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. That's right.
So the original meaning is that the master.
Yes.
Now, why is it the way of unity? It's because especially the supreme leader also has said that the Ghadir is the point of unity. It is, yes, because this is the incidence where we have 124,000 companions of the Prophet gathered on the day of Hajj, for example, on the day of Ghadir, and they all witnessed. And there is no other, we can say, there is no other tradition other than this, that the Prophet has said that man kuntu mawlahu fa aliyun mawla. So all have witnessed it. There are 1,000, you know, companions who have said this, that the Prophet has said. So this was the matter of unity, basically. And even I say in today's world, those who believe that Imam Ali was announced as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
So why you make Shias enemies of you?
Mm-hmm.
You should believe that the followers of Ali ibn Abi Talib are friends of you.
Okay.
Why you kill them?
Yes.
Why you oppress them? You know, the things that happen in Yemen, the things that are happening in Pakistan or other places.
Yes.
How the takfiris are killing the Shias. So, or maybe they're the, you know, the ulama or the scholars, Sunni ulama, some, they do takfir Shias. They say like Shias are kafir. Why you do this?
Yes.
Whereas your master, like the ones you think they are the authority over you, they have said the Ali ibn Abi Talib is my mawla and mawla of kulli mu'min and mu'mina, all the believing men and believing women. So therefore, it is a matter of the politics, that when it comes in the politics, when people are involved in, you know, in politics, they try to make difference. Why? Because otherwise, if they don't do that,
yes,
they cannot prove their own authority over others, or their own righteousness.
That's right.
They cannot prove this.
And on different occasions after Qadir Khum event, when the right of Imam Ali alayhi salam was forgotten and neglected,
mm-hmm,
on different occasions Imam Ali alayhi salam and other companions tried to remind and recall this event, the most important, which is the event of Ruhbah. You know, we know that in the event of, we can say, Ruhbah in the year 35, according to the Hijri calendar, according to Allama Hamini, Imam Ali alayhi salam asked about the priority of himself over leadership and Imam of the Muslim Ummah, and the other companions now, we can say, did bay'ah again, that this happened, and we were an eyewitness, so this and that. And this has been mentioned in both Sunni and Shia references. Hazrat Fatima al-Zahra also has claimed this on different
occasions.
And
after that, they changed the meaning. For example, in today's world, we see some scholars, they say that, yes, Ali is the leader and master in the spiritual journey.
Okay.
Whereas in the governorship or the apparent government, Islamic mm-hmm. government, there are these khulafa or caliphate system. So okay, they're now changing the meaning in this way.
So now what's happened that after three main caliphs, they again get back to Ali alayhi salam? So why is this happening? So what happens now to select Imam Ali alayhi salam, as Sayyid says, for the government again? So if Ali was only for the spiritual journey, why now, after 25 years, you again want to do bayah with Imam Ali alayhi salam? Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, so as you said, this has been under the shadow of the Holy Quran and the other ahadith, Allama Amini has compiled voluminous books, Al-Ghadir, and this has been... But nowadays, we do not see such authenticity among the Muslims. Why? I mean, the Muslims all around the world, they do not have enough knowledge about Qadir-e-Khum event. Whose responsibility is this? And why this historical lack of knowledge took place?
Actually, we cannot say that the scholars, Muslim scholars, they know all about this event of Ghadir. The problem is that the misinterpretation of the terms and the words that are used for by the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, they misinterpret that.
Okay.
They knew what happened because it is mutawatir. It is uninterruptedly narrated by many of the companions, and it is not something that we can say that it's not mutawatir. For the majority of the normal Muslims, the ordinary people, they might not be aware of this event.
Yes.
Because everything is controlled, you know, and all the societies, you know, that the mass media and all things are under the control of the political systems in those countries, that they do not allow the people to know about this. Otherwise, if you refer to their traditional sources, to their majama wal ahadith, to the historian, for example, sources, historical sources, you know that everything is mentioned about Ghadir.
Okay.
And it's very famous, it's very well known. And also this sentence, nice phrase of the Holy Prophet, Man kuntu mawla fa hadha aliyun mawla, it is a very well known sentence, which is everybody knows about it. But of course, we have nowadays this responsibility to be a muballigh of Ghadir and to actually express and to convey this message of Ghadir to the people, because it could unite us. Because, you know, when we go to Ghadir, when we refer to the event of Ghadir, it has lots of lessons for the Ummah, for the Muslim Ummah, not only for the Shiites. For example, when the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says that you have to love Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi wasallam, so love and muhabba and devotion, from moral perspective, from ethical perspective, is very much important that we should express love to the Ahlul Bayt, to the Amir al-Mu'mineen. So it is an order that the Holy Prophet commands all of us, not only the Shias, all Muslims, that you have to love Amir al-Mu'mineen, that you have to love the Ahlul Bayt. So from moral perspective, morally talking, not politically, how do you express your love to Amir al-Mu'mineen nowadays? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very important question for all Muslims. And that's from social perspective, again, we see that the Holy Prophet ﷺ says that if you unite and gather around Amir al-Mu'mineen ﷺ, we would be a kind of united nation, a united ummah. You know, it gives us unity. Because unity in Islamic ummah does not mean that we ignore and reject all the different denominations.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that. We have to focus... All different sects, all different branches of Islam, they have to focus on the shared and common things that we have in common.
Yes.
One of them is Ghadir. Ghadir is something that is common among all of us.
Yes.
So we can focus on it, we can give it, we can take it seriously as something that can unite us.
Mm-hmm.
Like we have Wahid Qibla. Qibla, our Qibla is one.
Yes.
Our God is one. Our book is one. You know? Our Prophet is one.
Yes.
Our Ghadir is also one. Mm-hmm. So it is a sign, it is a symbol of unity among Muslim ummah, Muslim nation.
Yes.
It gives us unity if we express the message of, or convey the message of Ghadir to the whole Muslim nation.
Mm-hmm.
It gives us unity, you know, because it is something in common and shared between all the Muslims.
And consider now we are in the Hajj season, for example.
Yes, of course.
For example, we can say the key holders of Kaaba gather all the people of the Hajj pilgrimage and say, we have one important message regarding your health, for example, okay?
Yes, of course.
That do this and do that for your health. For sure, the people will listen to you, okay? So now consider that Prophet Muhammad, okay, stops all the people, wait for all of them from different tribes come and said, I have a message for you
from
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Even if the meaning of Mawla is love, is friendship.
Affection, yes.
Yeah, you know, again, we should ask all Muslims that, oh, Muslim brothers, or Wahhabis, or Salafis, or Hanafis, Malikis, all of you.
Yes.
Please come together and love Amir al-Mu'mineen.
Yes.
What is the problem with this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's love Amir al-Mu'mineen. Let's follow Amir al-Mu'mineen, because it is something that we are in common, that we have shared in common
yes.
ideas about him.
That's right.
So if we follow the one whom we love, all of us, then it unites us. Because mm-hmm. we do not have such a sentence about the first caliph or second caliph or third caliph or the other companions.
That's
we have
right.
only about Amir al-Mu'mineen this kind of sentence. Let's come together around this sentence of Amir al-Mu'mineen, around this commandment of the Holy
yes.
Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, and obey the Holy Prophet.
Mm-hmm. Surah Ma'idah.
Adding one thing with what our dear guest has said, that, you know, in the love we have to do that. But on the other hand, we have other hadith as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you want knowledge, come to the door of Ali.
Yes.
Ana madinatul ilmi wa aliyun baba.
Yes,
if
yes.
you want wisdom, ana darul hikmati wa aliyun baba.
Okay.
So all these things, that's, you know, the point of unity, that mm-hmm. even if you want knowledge, don't go anywhere else. Because
mm-hmm.
Prophet has introduced
yes.
one door,
yes.
and that is Ali ibn Abi Talib.
Okay. The different verses as ayah, Surah Ma'idah, ayah 3, Surah Ma'idah, ayah 67, and also Surah Ma'araj, ayah 1 and 2, referring to Nu'man ibn Haris' story that, for example, asking for if Ali is my Mawla now, let Allah's curse be my own hand, and the piece of a stone comes, you know, and breaks his head, he dies. So different stories and different, we can say, ayahs of the Holy Quran referring to Ghadir event. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen Nawi and Sheikh Rouhani for a nice elaboration regarding the message of Ghadir. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
كتاب
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except him, and he has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brothers, sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program IRIB English Radio. And you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at the human being himself and how he is being portrayed in the Quran. Allah refers to the humans as heart, or he dresses the heart of the human being, and obviously not the organ that pumps blood, rather than the essence of the human being himself. And we spoke about this topic previously, so obviously I can't repeat myself. One of the things that we have to do in order to maintain our humanity is to maintain the heart itself and keep it safe and keep it healthy all the times. Among the things that helps us maintain and take care of the heart is contemplation and thinking. You see that when me and you, we get too busy thinking about this world, thinking about making money, thinking about building an empire, houses, cars, and all these, you know, matters of life. If we spend too much time and we immerse ourselves into thinking about them, what it will do in return, it will cause the person to become heedless, as we say, ghafla. And heedless from what? From the afterlife and from the effects of the actions, which is very important. So we need to understand that our actions have consequences, which sometimes we are completely heedless of. Therefore, to maintain the safety and health of the heart, we need to understand the consequences. Understanding the consequences is not going to come by itself. It requires a little bit of contemplation and thinking. A person needs to think of the afterlife first and think of his actions and think what would happen to him when he dies, how he will see the angel of death, How will he enter his grave? How he will be resurrected? How he's going to get questioned? And then it is either punishment or reward. There's a huge process that sometimes we neglect. If we keep our hearts and our minds constantly enlightened of this fact, then you will see either we will stop sinning or either we will drop sinning. The level will drop to minimum. And especially with other people, because haqq an-nas, as a topic that we've discussed before, is one of the most serious issues that we will face on the day of judgment, the rights of people. So when we think about ourselves and the process that we're going to go through, then that surely should make a person think twice before making an action. And, you know, whether cheating or lying or backbiting or harming other people. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, من أمر قلبه بدوام الفكر حسنت أفعاله في السر والجهر. He whoever make his heart think and contemplate, his action will be good, whether he is by himself or he is in public with other people. So you can see that when a person thinks and contemplates, this thinking, this contemplation, it will work wonders. It will do wonders to this person. And then it will make no difference to him whether he is with people or by himself, because Allah is one and the process is one. So it will not make a difference to him. This is the level that me and you need to reach in order to keep our hearts safe. Let's take a short break and then we will come back.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We were saying that a person needs to think and needs to contemplate, then that should help maintain the heart and the safety and the health of the heart. Sometimes we need to punish the heart itself. I mean, I do understand that the word punishment is very strong. But punishment and retribution from oneself doesn't have to be, you know, going to the mountains and, you know, praying day and night. No, there are things that we can do to help prevent ourselves from doing wrong, especially towards other people. So what we do is we impose certain things on ourselves in a form of a punishment that helps and maintains the safety of the heart. So, for example, a person says to himself, well, if you do this, if you backbite a person, if you cheat a person, if you lie to a person, for example, I will make you pray Salatul Layl, for example. It's something serious, even though it's something that we should be doing, but it's a good thing. You know, so sometimes you say, okay, I'm going to fast a day tomorrow. And obviously the shaitan hates this. So that sometimes we give ourselves tasks and chores to do if we do something wrong. And usually that sometimes works as a preventer. But obviously that requires also a process of thinking. It's not a one-time thing. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he says, تَوَلَّوْا عَنْ أَنفُسَكُمْ تَأْدِيبِهَا وَأَعْدُلُوا بِهَا عَنْ ضَرَاوَةِ عَدَاتِهَا. It's like when it comes to yourselves, you need to educate it, you need to punish it, you need to, you know, work with yourselves. So it could leave its bad habits and can change its bad habits. Because if you leave it, then obviously it will be too hard to fix and rectify. And then he also says, نَعْمَ الْعَوْنِ على أسر النفس وكسر عادتها الجوع. He says the best thing that can help you and support you in trying to maintain and keeping a leash on yourself and avoiding the bad habits, he says, hunger. And hunger, obviously, we're not saying a person should starve himself to death. No, but fasting. When a person fasts and he can't drink and he can't eat, it weakens the body. As the body becomes weak, the soul, the self, the nafs, becomes also weakened with it. And we've seen that happens to us when we fast during the month of Ramadan. We become too weak to do anything, like physically and mentally. So when a person uses that against himself, that, okay, if you do this, then I will do that, then all